Hi, this is Elizabeth Lynch of ChinaLawAndPolicy.com, and welcome to our podcast. For the past few months, Google's departure from China has been in the news with the focus on Google's refusal to continue to self-censor. But one area of the Google incident that has received scant attention is the cyber attack that initially led Google to critique China's system of internet censorship. Joining me today to discuss this issue is Dr. Adam Siegel of the Council of Foreign Relations. As the Ira A. Lippman Senior Fellow at the Council, Adam focuses on cybersecurity and cyber conflict. He is also a noted expert on China. Thank you for joining us today. Can you just give our listeners a little bit of background on the hacking which led to Google's announcement in January that it was looking to leave China? How widespread and sophisticated was the attack, and what was the theft that Google referenced in its press release, if you know at all?
So Google announced that it was going to be closing or shutting down its business in China, and what they said drove them to that decision was a hacking incident. Which seems to have two main components. The first was, as you said, a kind of attack on Google's intellectual property. It's kind of corporate knowledge and corporate property. And then the second was attacks on the Gmail accounts of human rights dissidents. Google said it traced those attacks back to China. It didn't implicate the Chinese government. Others, like the New York Times, have traced it back to Shanghai Jiao Tong University and a computer training institute. But the source of it still remains a bit of a mystery. There is some debate about how sophisticated the attacks were, which they're referred to as the Aurora attacks. Google has consistently said that they were extremely sophisticated, but a number of other kind of security analysts have said, in fact, they were fairly basic, that much of the code used has been floating around for a long time. What the IPR that the Chinese got or were trying to get is still unclear. Google hasn't explicitly said. Some people seem to believe that it was basically the kind of data and databases that Google collects on its own users. So basically the kind of core knowledge that Google extracts from what Google users, you know, do, how they do it, when they do it, which would be, you know, one of the most important kind of assets that Google has.
Mm-hmm. And in tracing back, or Google saying that it was traced back, the attacks were traced back to China, Why is that difficult to ascertain? I mean, to what degree, what can you put a percentage on how accurate you can trace back an attack? Or
the problem is you can continually trace back the attacks to certain computers or to certain networks or IP mm-hmm. addresses. But often, once you get there, some more kind of poking around leads to another computer behind that. And the other thing is you can, the hackers themselves can kind of spoof the addresses that they're using. So I think there becomes a kind of fairly high degree of certainty about where the attack might have come from within a national network. And then in some cases, even down to kind of specific IP addresses. But even then, you don't know who the hacker was that was involved, and you don't know actually the hacker's relationship to any state organization or anybody else for that matter.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of just China specifically, the cyber hacking, how prevalent is cyber hacking from China compared to other countries like Russia or even the United States or something like that? I mean, is China being singled out here?
I think China is being singled out in a sense. I mean, given it was a high-profile attack on a company like Google, but also given the state of U.S.-China relations right now, that it fed into a kind of worsening tenor in the bilateral relationship. But in kind of raw numbers, you know, for criminal activity, clearly Russia is very high up there, and we saw the political uses of cyber hacking in the case of the Georgian War and mm-hmm. Estonia and some other high-profile political cases. And, you know, there's a large amount of hacking that comes from the United States, and that's actually one of the big complaints on the Chinese side is that the Chinese are being scapegoated and they themselves are often victims of attacks, and many of those attacks come from servers in the United States. When you look at the number of kind of bad ISPs, internet service providers, that are hosting botnets and other kind of zombies that are attacking, you know, there's a large number of them that are in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so China's also a victim.
Right. Well, just focusing on China and the hacking there, can you explain maybe a little bit more what the hacker community is like in China? Is it an organized community? And what motivates the hackers? Do they do this just for fun, or are they ever hired for their skills? And then also, how do they determine targets? Like, how was Google determined? Was that just something for fun or for profit?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think the community itself is incredibly hard to characterize. It's very diverse. It's, I think, very decentralized. And, you know, the hacking, the community, you know, represents kind of the similar community that there's in the United States and Russia. There are, you know, what they're called script kiddies, you know, people, teenagers who are doing it for fun or to show off or to see what they can actually accomplish. There are criminals, people that are, you know, just hacking for financial gains. There are what are called patriotic hackers, people that hack websites or, you know, out of a kind of nationalistic feeling. Then there are people, there are hackers that are probably employed by the Chinese government, probably by the military or the security agencies that are used to attack specific targets for political reasons. And then there are, you know, hackers in the military that are thinking about how cyber would be used in an actual military conflict. So, the you know, of course, the important question is the relationship about all of these people, and I don't think we really have a very good idea. Clearly, there is some blurring of boundaries between kind of patriotic hackers and criminal hackers. The system itself seems to be, in many ways, a kind of a mirror of the system that has made China such a power in the global manufacturing, which is that there are kind of contracts and subcontracts and subcontracts of what people do, and, you know, somebody might be in charge of writing a very low-level code, and that code is then packaged up and used by people above them, who may then make contract for a specific project or may sell it on the open market. Certain things are just put out there on hacker websites, and you can just download them and buy them, you know, just for your own thing. You know, why Google was targeted, you know, if, and as Google says, that they were part of an attack that seems to have included at least 30 other technology companies, there does seem to be a push from Chinese intelligence community, from the espionage community, to try and get advanced technology from foreign companies. So we've seen, you know, for at least 5 years, if not longer, pretty concentrated, focused attacks on defense contractors and other U.S. technology providers. And then, you know, once you add the attack on the dissidents as well, then that also seems to be one of the interests of the attacks. But, you know, who within the Chinese government organized it or put it in a larger strategy, I think that we have really no idea of.
I guess that raises kind of the other issue that I think has been floating around with the Google incident and then just cyber hacking in general, is to what degree is the Chinese government involved in some of these incidences? I know Northrop Grumman issued a report last year to the U.S.-China Economic and Security Commission analyzing the link between military hacking for military purposes, but this general hacking of corporations, I mean, could it be that the Chinese government is behind it? And then also, when you make this distinction of political hackers, would that be motivated by the Chinese government, or is it just a byproduct of the nationalism that seems very active in China right now?
Yeah, I don't think we know. I think what the most we can say is on the espionage side, it just matches or it pushes in the same direction of a general concern we know that China has about technological dependence and wanting to gain as much technology from the West as possible. And that strategy, you know, I think has been in place for 15, 20 years. That includes, you know, perfectly harmless, normal kind of technology policy about mm-hmm. how China's going to increase its own technological capabilities. Goes from that to espionage and theft, and that you would expect that includes both kind of the normal type of espionage of, you know, bribing, stealing, theft of secrets from corporations, to now including cyber espionage and attacks on those things. So I would say that the government has a role in the sense that it has set this general direction of the policy and these concerns about technology and China's desire for it. Clearly, the intelligence agencies probably have a sense of specific technologies that they are concerned about and want to know more about, right? So the hacking of mm-hmm. the F-35 and the F-22 and those kind of things, right? Those are clearly probably driven by government agencies who are looking at a potential conflict with the United States and want to know what those capabilities are. But once you get to the level of, you know, Google, is there a government official that says, well, if we hack Google, then we can take that information and give it to Baidu and we can have a competitor? I don't think we know, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that clearly is a possibility. But at this point, it may be just criminal, right? It may be a criminal turns around and says to Baidu, we can sell this to you. And on the dissident side, I think it's probably very similar also. I think in some cases, the security agencies may have are targeting specific individuals and are using those capabilities. In other cases, probably criminal hackers go after people and then turn around and say to the intelligence agencies, we've got this person, you know, either do something for us or pay us for the information. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in the press, it's often been the Chinese government as attached to the cyber hacking. But does the Chinese government ever see the cyber hacking as a threat to its own rule, either from domestic hackers or from hackers in the U.S.? I mean, are they ever the victims, the government agencies ever victims of cyber hacking and cyber espionage, either domestically or abroad?
Yeah, I would think all of the time. I think, you know, from the international perspective, I think the Chinese basically assume that the United States is engaged in cyber espionage all of the time, and that given our capabilities, in particular the capabilities existed in the NSA, the National Security Agency, that they are, you know, we are probably getting more from them than they are getting from us, in the Chinese perspective, and that we are constantly hacking them. And so they point to that, as well as the kind of discussions in the United States about creating a cyber command in the military, and discussions about, you know, controlling the commons and all these other things, is kind of a representation of American hypocrisy about, you know, we're talking about militarizing cyberspace while they are being hacked. So I think, yes, that's clearly an issue from outside of China. On the domestic front, I think, yes, the you know, Chinese government agencies and corporations are being hacked. There's been a number of incredible, prominent cases of Chinese hackers spreading malware to try and steal, you know, identity numbers and virtual money from these multiple player games. Mm-hmm. You know, very prominent hackers have been arrested and eventually imprisoned. So I think that's part of the threat. The other threat is, of course, is that, you know, dealing with these patriotic hackers is a double-edged sword for the Chinese government. In that, you know, there is a fear that while they now are focusing externally on, you know, U.S. corporations or U.S. government websites, you know, in the case of the Olympics, on French websites mm-hmm. and things like that. But, you know, if their ire is turned inward, then those people could then, you know, hack Chinese government websites. So I think the Chinese government is very concerned, and you can see that, you know, in discussions about, you know, their own cybersecurity, but also trying to develop new types of software that are, you know, the problem with the, you know, Chinese are heavily reliant on Microsoft. You know, something like 90% of Chinese government offices use Windows. A lot of that is pirated, which means that it's not updated regularly for security patches. So there's a lot of vulnerabilities.
Okay. And in terms of, I mean, you make this distinction between patriotic hacking, criminal hacking, commercial hacking, but under Chinese law itself, is hacking in general illegal?
It is. You know, there are laws on the books against hacking, criminal hacking, privacy laws. Those were strengthened in December 2008, and then again in February of this year, I think, the Chinese announced that they were going to again try to strengthen anti-hacking laws, in particular kind of punishment for hackers, and also online privacy issues and some tort issues about privacy and defamation. Like I said, there were prominent cases of hackers who have been, you know, arrested and sentenced and fined. This guy who was wrote this malware called the Panda malware, I think it was, and was, you know, sentenced to, I think, 3 years and fined $18,000. So there are domestic laws against it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you think the domestic laws are sufficient in dealing with this? And also, how do the Chinese laws compare to laws in the United States against hacking?
I think they're comparable. I think the issue with all laws in China, of course, has to do about implementation.
Right.
Clearly the issue for, you know, the United States or other countries investigating hacking, you know, requires more cooperation from the Chinese about, you know, who is behind the attacks and then actually following up on prosecution. But I think within China, I suspect the issue is not the law per se, but expertise, you know, all the things we have in the States about, you know, how do you prosecute cybercrimes, expertise at the local level, resources, enough people staffing these kind of issues. From the Chinese perspective also, but, you know, the U.S. hasn't been all that helpful either. I've heard a number of cases where the Chinese have turned around to the FBI and said, you know, we think this hacking is coming from the United States, and the United States has not been all that responsive from what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess cyber hacking, I mean, it's definitely a crime, I guess, more without borders. So how do you see international law or treaties coming into play to battle the threat of cyber espionage?
Well, I don't think there's much to be done about espionage, right? There's no international treaties against espionage.
Okay.
And the you know, we engage in it, they engage in it, our allies engage in it. I think that's likely to happen. I think, you know, the espionage, we have to figure out how we're going to defend ourselves against it.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with espionage, of course, though, is that it's hard to differentiate espionage from kind of a could become vandalism or an attack, right? So I think what we'd want to kind of agree on with the Chinese is that, you know, we know espionage is going to go on, but, you know, things like probing electricity grids, right?
Mm-hmm.
That should not be occurring, right? Because or other kind of critical infrastructure, we should be working on how do we declare those off limits. On the criminal front, there is a the Council of Europe has this convention on cybercrime. I can't remember how many countries have signed it now. It's about, I think, 20 or 40. I can't remember exactly. But, you know, part of the problem is that most of the major players haven't signed it. The U.S. has signed it, Japan has signed it, but Russia hasn't signed it. And which, you know, goes a long way, I think, to defining consistent standards across national borders about what a cybercrime is. How do you punish hacking? Creates a deterrent. The problem with Russia and with China is things like, you know, things that we see as freedom of speech, they see as a cybercrime.
Okay.
So that's been a problem for in the case of Russia. But I have, the Chinese seem to be at least studying the Council on Europe convention, which is often the kind of first sign that the Chinese are moving towards international standards. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a way to go, a way to move forward. And within Asia itself, there are discussions. ASEAN has had a couple of discussions about creating a similar kind of convention on cybercrime in the region. And then the other issue is this international convention on kind of arms control, right, on cyber war. That I think the United States has entered into discussions with the Russians about it. That I think is very difficult, and I think is unlikely to be very useful, because in the kind of traditional terms of arms control verification, inspection, those are all impossible with cyber weapons. Mm-hmm. So that I think is probably just useful just for talking's sake, but will not result in any kind of concrete agreements.
Just to follow up on the Convention on Cybercrime, you said that one of the problems is definitions of terms. Is that the only thing that would hold back a country like China and Russia from signing on to this kind of convention, or are there other factors?
I think that's a big one, but I do think also that right now, at least, China and Russia find it politically and strategically useful to kind of have this arm's length relationship with hackers. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, this kind of, at times, the government's willingness to directly use or indirectly use hackers for their own political purposes makes it, you know, right now that's a reason for them not to crack down too hard on criminal hacking. So that is, I think, you know, another reason why it's been hard to kind of create a common ground.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that there's any space for having maybe a bilateral agreement between the U.S. and China, or a trilateral agreement between U.S., China, and Russia about issues of cyber espionage, like not probing electricity grids or things like that? Or do you think it would have to be a global?
Well, I think any convention would have to be global. Okay. But I think there is a benefit for having these bilateral discussions, only if, because this area is, you know, newly emerging, and policymakers, I don't think, are particularly cognizant of all the risks kind of problems involved in any of these issues. Excuse me. So just having a discussion with the Russians and the Chinese and, you know, others about what the potential rules of the road might be, I think, are probably pretty useful.
Mm-hmm. And absent any kind of global agreement, how best should the U.S. government and U.S. corporations deal with this issue on their own? I mean, how can they better prevent it from happening? Or can they?
Well, I think, you know, that's what we're struggling with now, that the United States finally has the cyber czars in place, you know, Howard Schmidt. I think one of the big things that's still occurring in the United States is kind of a debate about what the best metaphor for this is, right? How do you think about the cyber issue, right? And you have those like, this op-ed in the Washington Post several weeks ago about by the former head of NSA, McDonald, about, you know, basically cyber war and we're losing it, and he, you know, his response was very much a kind of militarization of cyberspace, and in fact he calls for something called like the re-engineering of the internet, so we can basically see where any attack is coming from. And then you have Schmidt at a conference a couple of weeks ago also basically saying, I don't believe in cyber war, I don't think cyber war is the right metaphor. And you have those people talking about, you know, resilience and kind of more of a public health model for how do you respond to these things. You know, you have to defend, you have to respond, you have to quarantine. So I think we have this broad outline, we have this debate to kind of settle in the States, but I think the way we're moving is probably closer to the public health, well, actually probably both tracks at the same time. But from the defense side, I think you're beginning to see, you know, more traction on private-public cooperations about definitions of standards of, you know, what does secure actually mean and how should it be implemented. More spending on R&D for cybersecurity, more training of people, and that's a major issue, is about getting people trained, more public awareness. So these are all kind of these are all domestic issues.
Mm-hmm. And just a final question, since President Hu Jintao is in the United States, in Washington, today, do you think in his side talks with President Obama the issue of cyber hacking and cyber espionage will be coming up? Or, I guess, how important do you think the administration right now views this issue, especially in light of the fact that Secretary of State Clinton has openly talked about it?
I suspect it wasn't brought up in these meetings, if only because, you know, over the last 2.5 weeks, it's been a clear effort on both sides to try to get the relationship back on track. And clearly the administration's major strategic concern right now is Iran, and then with the currency being the second concern. And so those are the two issues, from what I've heard, they were discussed in the meeting. And so I suspect that there was no reason to bring up the cyber issues because there's no solution or discussion that's helpful to both sides at this point. So other than just poking them in the eye with it, I don't see why they would bring it up.
Right.
So I suspect it was not discussed.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. This was very interesting, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.